answer, then go into another. But maybe erasing this and talk.
Finish I.W. Frank, because this is the early part of the century.
The whole story of National Steel is the third largest steel company in the country. He was the principal founder and stockholder of that company.
Let's go back to I.W. Frank and tell us some more about his business.
I don't remember where we left off.
In 1901, he formed an amalgamation of the rolling mills, which resulted in United Engineering and Foundry Company.
That's correct.
Which became the world's leading manufacturer of rolling mill equipment.
Yes. There are, in the files of United Engineering Company, many references to those early days of United. There are stories about the then President Isaac Frank and the growth of the plant site. There happened to be a small white framed building shown in this picture, which I'm holding here. It was the homestead of the brother and sister-in-law of Stephen Collins Foster. And there are reports that Foster wrote many of his famous songs in this little white cottage out along the Allegheny. And as the plant grew up, Isaac Frank jealously protected that little cottage. So you can see the plant is growing up right around it. They made it part of their offices. There are other anecdotes in the history of United Engineering about him. He had a plaque on his desk which said simply, "It can be done." And that became kind of a byword and inspiration to the company and its growth. There's a great deal more here on the early days of that company, which we needn't go into now. It's also interesting to note that he was extremely active in the earliest days of what's now known as National Steel Company, which is today the third largest steel company in the United States. The origins of that company was the Phillips Sheet and Tin Plate Company, which was incorporated in West Virginia in 1905. At that time, I.W. Frank was the largest stockholder of this small company, and as it grew, and as its name changed to the Weirton Steel Company, he continued his interest, and others joined the board, of course. Was recently sent copies of the very earliest minutes of those several companies showing his involvement. And ultimately, Weirton Steel, together with Great Lakes Steel, Detroit, and the M.A. Hanna Company of Cleveland were merged in 1929 into the National Steel Company, which to this day has its headquarters in Pittsburgh. And I.W. Frank was on the original board of the National Steel Company when it was formed in 1929.
Did William Frank continue the interest in the steel company?
William Frank, my father, stayed in the steel industry in this sense. He went with Copperweld Steel in the 20s, and he went on to the board of United Engineering and Foundry Company during his father's lifetime, and remained on United Engineering's board until he went into government service during World War II, when he resigned from United. And after the war, he went back on the board of United Engineering and stayed on again for many years until the exact date I have here. We can check that later. But let me get it now. William Frank, you asked about his involvement in the steel industry. I told you that he, when he graduated from college, went with Damascus Bronze Company, which was a leading foundry in the area. Later became the National Bearing Metals Corporation, and then the National Division of American Brakeshoe. He went with Copperweld in 1927. And stayed with Copperweld except for a period during World War II, and left the board of Copperweld in 1951. He resigned at that time as chairman and member of the executive committee and a director of the company. Resignation in 1951. In terms of United Engineering and Foundry Company, he first became a director in 1924. And he served as a member of its executive committee from 1930 to 1942. And after World War II, he resumed his association with the United in 1946 as a director, until he retired in 1961, when he was elected a director emeritus. For several years, he was associated as director with Apollo Steel Company. And those were his major involvements in the heavy industry of Pittsburgh.
What philanthropies was he interested in?
Here again, I can pull out a list of most of the Jewish philanthropies of Pittsburgh. He served on the board of the Civic Club of Allegheny County, on the board of the Federation of Jewish Philanthropies, Association for the Improvement and Condition of the Poor, Board of the Tuberculosis League, Board of the United Jewish Fund at that time, and the Board of the United of the Young Men's Hebrew Association, YMHA. Former president of Westmoreland Country Club, and director of the Cornell Club in Pittsburgh. Those are some of his activities.
How many children did William Frank have?
He had four. The oldest is my brother Thomas, William Frank.
When was he born?
Tom was born in 1916. And I was the next. I was born in 1918. And my sister Marjorie was born in 1923. And my father remarried in 1945, my mother having died in 1940, and with Mary Nabenshue Frank, a fourth child was born. So I have a half-sister by the name of Maud, ask me her birth date, because I have to look it up. But Maud was born, it's right here somewhere, about 1955. Or 56.
Is there anything else that you would like to tell us about your father?
I might just add that he, after retiring from active participation in business, I'm speaking of other than as a director of these companies, he got great satisfaction, I'm sure, out of his service during World War II. He volunteered as a dollar-a-year man and was asked to come to Washington at that point by the War Production Board.
What do you mean by a dollar-a-year man?
Industrialists and others, businessmen during World War II, were asked to volunteer their services and their special skills in the service of their government. These jobs were without pay, but they were given $1 per year, and they were known as dollar-a-year men. His activities with the War Production Board were gave him great satisfaction, I'm sure. Fortune magazine of March 1943, in May 43, discuss his activities in the War Production Board. He spent many months, beginning in 1944, as a in the simulated rank of colonel, touring Western Europe in a jeep. The Allies were anxious to return to production many of the bombed-out factories of Germany, and it was his job to visit these as soon as the Germans had pulled back and determine how quickly these plants could be put back into production for the Allied cause, particularly in armaments. And he wrote extensive letters to his family from Europe about his experiences there. He was greatly moved by the things he saw in Germany as the Germans pulled out, and the utter devastation was left in the wake. I was going to quote one paragraph from one of these letters, but I won't take the time now, in which he gave his view of
I think that would be interesting. Do you want to read it?
Hold 1 second. I'll find that quotation. Yes, I found the tape still running.
Yes, it is.
This is when he returned to Paris after touring bombed-out areas of Germany. I say touring because he did it all in a jeep and it was pretty rough. But he got back to Paris in April of 45. And in the bucket seat of a C-47, as he says, And he, in a quote from his letter of that day, chestnut trees are everywhere and seem to have as many flowers, both white and pink, as leaves. Rhododendron, wisteria, and magnolia lend more color. After all the rubble, the swept-up streets are a delight. Crowds line the sidewalks to wave at the released POWs, and the DPs being flown into the airfield and then hauled through the city in trucks. Most of these men have not seen Paris for 5 years. Their faces express incredulity, grief, and joy. In contrast to the cheering crowds, they are silent. It will be many years before all people can go to their homes and live in peace. But the start has been made. I hope that the economic future of Europe is not as black as it seems to me today, and that this intelligent, cultured, industrious, orderly, sadistic, mad people are made powerless to do this thing again. And on that note, I'm signing off with love for you all.
That was very interesting. When did your father leave the government service?
He left in 1945. And several years later, moved from Pittsburgh to New York City, where he and Mary lived. Dad died in 1964. And his widow, Mary, still lives in New York and spends a good bit of time on a ranch which she operates in Colorado.
Is there anything else that you'd like to tell us about your father or your mother before we get on to talking about you?
Well, I didn't say much about my mother. She, too, was involved in a number of charitable efforts in Pittsburgh, including the National Council of Jewish Women. A number of others. Her father was a Morris Kingsbacher. We have some history of his family in the old country. He having come to this USA as a young man and was also a peddler with a pack on his back in the early days.
Did she have any sisters or brothers?
Yes. Mother had two older sisters. Irma Kingsbacher Stix, who married Ernest Stix of St. Louis and lived there her lifetime. And another sister, of course, was Gertrude Kingsbacher Sunstein, who married Elias Sunstein and lived in Pittsburgh. And a younger brother, Alvin Kingsbacher, who lived in California.
Could you tell me something about yourself? What do you remember about your home when you were growing up?
Well,
were your parents indulgent with it? Something about your home might be different from your children's home.
Where were you born?
I was born in the home, physically born in the home, on Aylesboro Avenue. This was a half a block away from the home in which my father grew up, and which his father had bought about 1902. That home still stands on the corner of Aylesboro and Whiteman, perhaps. But I was born in the home. And I'll be very brief about myself. I went to Shadyside Academy. Worked very hard in those days. All of us in Shadyside wondered whether it was worth the effort. The loads of homework every night. Our social life was therefore mostly confined to the weekends. Graduated in 1936, and somehow without really remembering ever having discussed it in great detail, I too ended up as an engineer studying at Cornell University. graduated in 1940. First job was as a sales engineer, development engineer with Copper World Steel Company at the Glassport plant. And in 1942, when the war was on, I received a commission in the Air Force after cadet training at Chanute Field in Illinois. And I became an engineering officer in the Air Force, serving a good bit of the time in the Air Materiel Command at Patterson and Wright Fields in Ohio. And when the war was ended, I was discharged as a major and returned to Copper World Steel until 1950, whereupon I was asked by my father and Leon Falk Jr. if I'd be willing to share some of the load in management of some of the companies we had joint interests, in which we had joint interests with the Falks. So that for the next 5 years, I was active in the management of Hotel Webster Hall, the Ruskin Apartments, Midtown Motors, and Central Lincoln Mercury dealership. By 1955 and 1956, we had sold our family interests in those companies, and I, together with one partner, formed American Air Surveys, Incorporated in Pittsburgh here. We started in the field of aerial mapping, making maps from aerial photography, and the company grew. And by 1966, we had an offer to sell our company, which then had 200 employees on the payroll and was growing at a pretty good clip. We had an opportunity to sell it to a national organization who was anxious to blend it into some of their operations, which we did. We sold it, and I remained with them until 1969. At which time I started a small business, deliberately small with low overhead after the one I had just left, in the field of international business consulting. We represent a limited number of clients in finding foreign markets for their industrial products and possibly foreign licensees to manufacture these products.
Are you married?
Yes, I married Ruth Ohringer in 1942. We have four children. I'm sure you'll ask me their names and ages.
Yes.
Susan was born in 1944. And married Thomas Lippert. Thank you. And they have three wonderful children, three boys. Our second child was Jimmy. James William Frank was born in 1945. And he was married to a charming Mexican girl by the name of Sonia. They're living in Mexico City at present. Linda came next. Linda was born in 1948 and married a fellow Cornelian by the name of David Ruth. His last name is Ruth. And they live outside of Ithaca, where David works at Cornell. They live on a farm and have two youngsters. One daughter, John Sara, and one son, Sebastian, age 4 months. Our youngest is Billy, another woman.